Hello you, welcome to Season 11, Episode 4 of the Ubuntu Podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss KDE, the desktop of the future, with Michael. We'll also have some type of love, which I think is command line, and we'll go over your feedback. I'm Alan, and joining me this week is Mark. Hello again, Mark.
Hello again, Alan.
How are you doing?
None too shabby, thank you.
Super. And Michael is back. How are you doing, Michael?
Hello, I'm tickety-boo.
Yay, good answer.
On brand.
Mark, what have you been up to recently?
I have been writing Go.
Ooh, it's good. Let's just clarify. Not the black and white game.
No.
But the language, the Go language.
The language, yes.
Right, okay. Go on then, what do you think?
I like it. I'm not sure I understand it all yet, but I'm getting there. What I really like is the fact, so I think I mentioned in the last episode about making a doorbell with a Raspberry Pi.
Yes.
Yes, and I wrote a blog post about it as well. So originally I wrote the code that it runs in Python. So I've rewritten that in Go because Go does some cool stuff with concurrency built in. You can just basically run any function in a concurrent thread, which is really handy if you want things to happen at once. But the other really cool thing is it's really easy. It's a compiled language rather than an interpreted language, and it's really easy to cross-compile stuff. So I can...
Really?
Yeah. So I've got Go and all of the tools installed on my laptop, and I just run Go build with some environment variables set to say build it for ARM6. And then it spits out a binary which will run on the Raspberry Pi. And then I don't have to install Go on the Raspberry Pi. I just have a binary which will run.
No idea.
And it just works. It's really cool. But yeah, it's as a language, it's a bit kind of lower level than I'm used to. So I'm having to sort of get my head around some, you know, what to expect and what variables mean and whether they're pointers or values and things like that. But I'm really enjoying it.
How long did it take you to port your Python thing to Go?
I probably spent about 3 or 4 hours working on it.
Oh, okay. But it's not a super complicated thing, but you picked it up pretty quickly, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there were a few things that I had to get my head around because it's a sort of, I think of it as a bit of a batteries not included language. So a lot of the kind of lower level stuff where you just have a built-in function or a library function for doing in other languages, it expects you to write yourself because it's more efficient to do it that way or
right,
something.
Right, but like Node, it's got loads of like reusable stuff that other people have written, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, but once you get the hang of that, it's it's really good.
Nice.
Yeah, it wasn't like, I mean, it looks like most other languages. The syntax is very slightly different. You have some brackets instead of colons and things like that, but yeah, once you know that and you've got your editor set up to help you out, it's really straightforward. I like it.
Michael, you do development work, but yours is mostly web dev stuff, isn't it? So
yeah, most of my stuff is web dev, but Python also works with web dev, so I've messed with Go as well to kind of move things to from Python to Go. And I like Go as well. It is like a low level thing that also has like an easier barrier to entry.
Yeah, definitely.
It's funny, when I first started working at Canonical, I remember being in a meeting with Mark Shuttleworth and a bunch of other people. And way back then, bearing in mind this is 6.5 years ago, he was like, Go is the future. You should be writing everything in Go. And I know internally we write a lot of our stuff in Go, like Snapd is written in Go and Juju's written in Go. And I think Conjure Up and some of the other stuff is written in Go. But he was singing the praises of Go long before I'd even heard of what the hell it was. Yes. So, Michael, what have you been up to recently?
Well, I've been doing a lot of things, but one of the things that's probably the most nerdy is I created my own macro keyboard. So I now have two keyboards that sit on my desk at all times.
Wow. You're like a hacker with like two keyboards and like 8 screens or something.
Exactly.
And you wear a hoodie and you've got light, the screen's reflected off your sunglasses.
And that's the only light in the room, exactly.
Right, of course. Yes. what kind of keyboards are these?
Well, it's basically just a regular keyboard that I repurposed. And so I have about 220 keys available to me, but only one works as a keyboard. The other one is each individual key does a specifically a script. sometimes the script will load specific commands, or sometimes the script will just send another shortcut via XDoTool or something like that.
Wait. So I could have a keyboard on my desk, right? That is the one where I type my love letters to my wife. And then I could have another keyboard, which is also plugged into the same computer via a USB port. And I can press buttons on that and it won't interfere with the stuff that I'm doing. It will do something else that you've programmed. It doesn't just map directly to a keyboard.
Correct. It can do it. You can do it to any particular keyboard you want, because Linux has a built-in automatic detection of different keyboards. So like other operating systems don't automatically detect it. So in XPIN input, you just disable the keyboard functionality of one of the keyboards, and then you use a different daemon to watch for signals from that keyboard. And then you can make it do whatever you want with any. You can write a script to do anything and just hit one key to make that script go.
That is amazing.
Is there already a tool there for doing this with a second keyboard, or did you have to write the daemon as well?
The daemon I didn't write. No, the daemon's called EV Router, and it's they're actually rewriting it to make it even better from the previous version. But this is a really great solutions, because this is a daemon that just watches for the signals, and you tell it which keyboard to watch for, and then you make scripts that will activate based on those signals. The only problem is that there's basically no documentation, so I had to I had to figure out everything, how it worked, and I had to write some stuff custom. So
was it like you press a key, you see what signal you get, you make a note of it, you press the next key?
Yes, you have to hit the key to figure out which exact signal, like what number identification for that key is. And I might be able to make it, if I have testing for more keyboards, to see if there's any like overlap to be able to like provide some documentation. But so far I've only done it with one keyboard, because it did take a while. But it's really cool, and it also works with like multiple applications to do all kinds of things.
It's sorry, but since you said this, my mind is a raging torrent flooded with rivulets of thought cascading into a waterfall of creative alternatives. I am just thinking of the ways in which I would use additional keyboards on my laptop.
I do it all kinds of stuff with OBS and Kden Live and all kinds of things.
Oh my gosh. We're in danger of like talking about this for hours. So we need to move on. Well, I'll tell you what, give us some links. We'll put them in the show notes.
For sure.
So in one of our previous episodes, episode 2, we had a chat with Will Cook from the Ubuntu desktop team. And one of the things we talked to him about was Unity, a kind of throwaway comment he made about Canonical made an announcement that Unity was going away, and all the Unity lovers came out of the woodwork and told us how much they missed Unity. There are a lot of people who told us we've made an incorrect decision and we shouldn't have chosen GNOME and we should have chosen KDE. And one of those people was you, Michael, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think I made a video about using Plasma as a foundation for Unity roughly about a week after the announcement.
So what was it? So obviously you're a KDE user, right?
Yeah, I would say right. So.
And how much effort did you have to go into to turn a stock KDE desktop into something that a Unity user might be familiar with?
Surprisingly, not much. Like, the reason why I made the video is because of how flexible Plasma is. Because you can customize things without having to write any code. So I got to, like, at the end of the video, you can see how close it is to Unity and has all these different widgets that mimic a lot of the functionality. And I think I wrote one line of code to accomplish that. And the rest of it was all like through widgets and plasmoids and stuff like that, and just moving things around. So it's very flexible. And if you wrote code, you can extend it even further. And then I also talked about, I had a follow-up video where I talked about the functionalities that are going to be missing from Unity that I am going to be missing, like the HUD is fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's technically possible in Plasma. It was already available in Plasma 4, actually. So it would definitely be possible to put it in Plasma 5 as well.
I did, as I've mentioned previously, I've switched to KDE on one of my laptops on my ThinkPad. And in the past, I have been not a friend of KDE. It just didn't fit. And I found it frustrating. And now, like, having seen your video about how to customize it, you know, that level of customization is both a blessing and a curse. You know, you've got that, you've got that ability to tweak and modify, and you can turn it from looking like one thing into looking like something completely different. But at the same time, there's 1,000 different checkboxes and radio buttons and twiddles.
Learning
and
how to do everything.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I on Unity, I pretty much have a stock experience on Unity. But on KDE, I'm a little bit scared to go touching stuff. Like, I'm not an idiot, but I find if I go touching stuff, I feel like I'm going to break it. And I know that's something my mum would say. But it really feels like there are just too many controls. I feel like I'm sitting in front of the space shuttle sometimes.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing about Plasma is that there are a lot of things that you can change, and some of the things you can change are potentially breakable. Like, they can cause harm. But if you don't know what they do and things like that. But there's also things that are just kind of confusing because they have different labels for different things. So, like, when everyone else in the, you know, the Linux community call workspaces are not called workspaces in Plasma. They're called virtual desktops. But they also have another term for, they also use workspace for something else, which is creates a confusion. So there's definitely some overwhelming confusion customization things that happen with Plasma. And I used to be the same type of not really interested in trying Plasma because of this issue of all these different configurations and how long it would take me to get it exactly how I want it. And then I had multiple conversations with people who were KDE fans, and after, you know, them badgering me to finally try it, I tried it for, I said, okay, I'll try it for a week. And that was 2014, and I'm still using Plasma.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting because I, long time listeners to the show might remember that I used to be a KDE user.
I think
solely.
We ribbed you when you first became a presenter on the show. We were like, oh, you're the KDE user, or, you know, the usual like bullying.
Yeah, so I used to
podcast.
I used to use Kubuntu until I think it was Ubuntu 12.04, where at which point I realized that all of the sort of the customizations, and I did customize Plasma very heavily. I was not afraid to completely rip it apart and like start again. That basically the key functionality I was going for was what Unity did in the first place, which was a sort of a keyboard centric but then get out of the way kind of experience. And actually I found going, I briefly tried I think I tried Kubuntu desktop a few weeks ago, and I found that I did very smoothly fit back into my old habits, and like I remembered all of the keyboard shortcuts and bringing up the launchers and stuff. So I'm thinking I might have to give it a go again. But it's kind of interesting that you two seem to have gone the other way from I have, in that you sort of went into it and cautiously you're sort of wondering about, you know, messing around with it more, whereas I was completely like mess around with everything, and then I just decided now just use Unity as the default.
Well, I actually did it like it was kind of like that. Mine was both ways. For a long period of time, I was like, I don't want to deal with this. It's just too much. And then after I made the commitment to try it, I was like, okay, if I'm going to try it, I'm just going to go all in and just figure out how this thing works. And then after about a week, I started teaching them how to do things in Plasma. So it was really cool. And the what's funny is about it, I used to be like a really big GNOME fan. So I don't really like the default Plasma. So my Plasma basically looks like and functions very heavily to the GNOME style.
So I'm kind of surprised with myself that I haven't actually bothered making my KDE system look like Unity or look like anything else. I've just got the panel at the top, and there aren't that many keyboard shortcuts that I use on a regular basis. I for some reason in my head I think there are, and I feel like on Unity it's a very keyboard centric, you know, experience, and you know, I press the super key and the alt key for the various features they have. But actually, on both Unity and KDE, I can flip flop between them no problem. I don't feel like I'm in alien space. In fact, the thing that throws me more often is just the fact that the Unity laptop that I'm on has the control and function keys swapped over from the KDE laptop. So it's actually a physical problem more than the software problem. I don't actually have a problem flicking between the two. I find them both, even though they're very different. You know, you stab the super key and type Firefox, and that will open Firefox. And
you can go into Plasma's settings and actually switch those two keys if you want, so they're physically the same.
You have got to be kidding me.
It's in the input section of system settings. Yeah, you can change all kinds of things. Like you can change caps lock to do a different key. You can.
Oh yeah, I used to do that.
Yeah, you can change it. I have it set up because I hate caps lock, and I use caps lock for other things, so it never actually functions as caps lock. But you never know; you might need caps lock. So I hit both shifts at the same time, and it becomes caps lock. Hit another shift, and it disables it.
That's amazing.
So, all kinds of stuff.
So one of the other things I wanted to ask you about was you mentioned recently you've been doing some work with the Kubuntu team.
Yeah.
What was that in relation to?
Well, it was basically because I met some people who worked on Kubuntu, and I just started talking to them. And at one point, I made a suggestion about customizing the defaults of Kubuntu so it would like be nicer presentation and nicer defaults for people to switch to Kubuntu for the first time kind of thing. And they listened to my first suggestion. That was their biggest mistake, because then there became like 20 more suggestions and they continued to come. So
I mean, I haven't touched Kubuntu for 8 years or so. So I don't even know what it looks like. I don't know
how different it is. Well, the default Plasma.
Is it default Plasma? Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like most KDE distros don't customize the Plasma experience. They just look like all the same. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the things I wanted to get Kubuntu to do, was to customize it. So the things that I don't like about the default Plasma are like minimal paper cut things. So the interface of Plasma is super bright everywhere, but I don't want it to be bright everywhere, because the panel is there all the time and it gets in the way sometimes. And if it's super bright, it's kind of distracting. Mm. So my first suggestion was to tell them to do the windows to be the bright window theme, but to have the panels and the widgets and the menus to be dark theme. And they've switched that. So that's in 18.04 Kubuntu will have that.
Which actually is what Unity has by default. The ambience theme is like dark panels, dark menus, dark window titles, but the content of the window is still light. Interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty much going to be like it'll transition to that kind of style. And that's already available in the beta if you want to try it out. But there's also a lot of cool features that I've convinced them to switch to. Like this is something that it's annoyed me. The second I tried Plasma, when you open an application, the application icon bounces like a crazy dog on next to your mouse.
Yeah.
And it always annoyed me, and I convinced them to just make it.
I thought that was quite endearing. Like,
maybe in 1997.
fair. Yeah.
But it's much better for if it's, in my opinion, it just needs something to let you know that something's happening. So the icon just sits there and like it shows up. Once it's done loading, it goes away. So
it's
like,
funny.
That's fine.
You say that, you know, jokingly about 1997. One of the like negative things I always used to say about KDE is that it always looked like a bad shareware app from the 1990s, right? It just felt like lots of controls within areas within windows, and there was lots of like squares within squares within squares, like nested, so it looked like pieces of paper stacked on top of each other inside a window, and it felt like a really poor set of controls. I mean, it's cute, you know, and it's
kind of funny, because I thought the exact same thing. I was like, I was, before I even tried it, the only reason I considered trying it was because I knew Plasma 5 was coming, so I did try KDE 4 at the time. And it made me feel like it was, I'm a designer, so the visuals are very important to me. And KDE4's visuals were lacking. Let's just say lacking.
Mm.
Or XP, basically.
And you mentioned the bouncing cursor, and I never really thought about it. Part of me thinks it's kind of nice to know that there's something happening that I sometimes watch my wife, and she's using a Windows computer, and she'll click on an icon and nothing happens because the application is spinning up and, you know, there's other stuff going on. She's only just booted the machine, so there's actually an awful lot of disk activity. So when she's trying to launch some big, fat, heavy program and there's other stuff going on, she gets no feedback, so she double-clicks it again, right? Whereas in KDE, I kind of thought that that bouncing mouse cursor was there to kind of help those kind of people to say, hey, I've recognized that you've clicked that thing. I'm going to launch that thing in a minute. But for now, I'm going to show you a little bouncing icon so you know I heard you, right?
Right. But you can have the same effect with just an icon showing that normally isn't there. So that's what my suggestion was, is the icon of the application you clicked will show instead of the bouncing version of it.
Oh, okay. So just get rid of the animation.
Yeah, just remove the animation, still keep the functionality. So you still get the benefit without having the annoyance of it bouncing all the time.
Neat.
Yeah, so there's the other thing that one of the things that, like, the defaults are like my pet peeve of things. And one of the things that really was a big pet peeve for me, not because I really care personally, but because I care about the onboarding of people. So when they first try something, there shouldn't be any kind of, you know, any kind of challenge for them when they first use it. So by default, Plasma uses a single click to open files where nothing at all else does that I know of. There might be something, but Windows, Mac, all double click.
Did OS2 do that? I have a vague feeling there was something. Oh, no, it was the Atari ST. That's how far back I'm having to go to remember something. I think it was the ST or the Amiga, one of those two. No, the ST was double click.
The Amiga definitely did.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, because we had a really, like, the Amiga mouse was really crusty and you had to, like, hammer the button,
right,
like, really hard. And it definitely, because it did, what happened is you did a click on the icon and it did an animation that looked like the folder was open, and then you had to click it again for it to actually open it.
Right. I'm sure there was some. So I would ask one of our listeners to write in and let me know, because my memory's failing, I'm old. And if you remember this, you're probably old too, so ha. What was the thing that had a single click to open a window? Why is that pattern triggering a memory?
You could also configure, like, Windows 95.
Yeah, there was a tweak UI. What were they called? Power tools.
No, it was if you called, if you enabled whatever they called it, active desktop.
Active
or
web
something.
Desktop, yeah.
Yeah, then it made them act like hyperlinks.
So I still have that turned on, and I curse every time I do it. And I very I very slowly click things because I think, oh, God, no.
You should upgrade from Windows 90. Yeah.
But I love that Bonsai Buddy and the web desk. Do you know what? I think Bonsai Buddy is probably before you were born, Mark.
No, I remember Bonsai. Hey, wait a minute. I remember filling my PC with malware. Thank you very much.
Well, just for those who would like to change it now, you can configure it in the Dolphin settings.
Sweet. That's awesome. So I think I might have to give Kubuntu a try when it comes out 18.04. I wanted to talk more about some other subjects, but I think we're going to have to get you on again to cover those because we're running out of time. But yeah, that was super awesome. If you're a KDE user and you have other super top tips on how to use KDE more effectively, and if I'm using it wrong, tell me how to use it properly, then drop us an email, show@ubuntupodcast.org.
If you love the command line as much as we do, send us a command that will blow our minds, and we might even mention it on the show. Send your command line love to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
And now... Okay, Mark, go on.
No, you can do it.
All right. It's time for command line love, and we have a command line love from Michael. You brought one with you.
Absolutely.
What did you bring with you?
It's an incurses file manager called Ranger. And it's one of those, like, things that you wouldn't really realize how powerful it is until you start playing with it. But it has vi key bindings. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a very fast file manager that has all kinds of different features and something you might not even consider, which it has support for using your mouse inside of the file manager if you wanted to. So it doesn't require you to use the command line in every way, but or the keyboard in every way, but you can. And it's the best thing about it, I love about it, is the rifle system, which is their file launcher. So when you activate any kind of file, like a JPEG or a PNG or something, it'll load your image viewer based on what file type it is.
So how does it load a JPEG if you're in the terminal?
It opens it in like whatever your default image viewer is.
Ah, I see. So, right, yes.
So, assuming you're in a terminal on a graphical desktop, not in a TTY. Yeah.
Sorry, right. my immediate assumption was over SSH.
Your immediate assumption was I would be doing this on a VT100 terminal, of course.
Yeah. You totally can do that, but it can also load other things and other things.
Wow. And is this packaged up anywhere, or where'd you get
it? Yeah, everywhere. You can get a link in the show notes on the GitHub to get the latest version if you like, but it's basically in every distro. Like it's been around for many years.
Wow. I had never heard of that.
I feel like Alan is going to make a snap of this by tomorrow.
Do you know what? I was tempted to before the show started, but we ran out of time. Maybe by next week. Awesome. Thank you for that.
Yep.
We love getting your feedback. If you've got a comment about something you hear on the show, why don't you drop us an email on show@ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it is indeed time for all your wonderful feedback, singular. Feel free to send us some feedback. You know where to send it. All the details are on the website. Steve Kaplan did that. He emailed the show and said...
Hi there. I'm a first-time listener and new Linux convert. I'm wondering, what is the connection between snaps and rolling release that was alluded to? Thanks a lot.
Ah. So this was a kind of in-joke that we triggered when we chatted to Will Cook, and he said something about there being lots of different snaps of different applications, and then said heading towards the possibility of... ... And then I interjected and said, you're going to say it, aren't you? The R word, meaning rolling release. And he said, yes, rolling release. And then we laughed a little bit. And the reason why that's a kind of in joke is because the subject of Ubuntu switching to being a rolling release has come up so many times over the years from people who've been frustrated at the fact that there's old software in the archive, or people who've used Arch Linux or some other rolling distro, and they say, oh my God, this antiquated system that Ubuntu has of not having a rolling distro, what are they thinking? They should switch to being a rolling distro. And the conversation has come up in the project so many times, but we've never switched to being a rolling distro. But the point Will was making is, if you've got a kernel snap and a gadget snap and all your applications are snaps, then you're close to being a rolling distro, which is something that we could be in the future, is the answer to your question, Steve.
There's a lot of potential for that. Just the snaps for applications is for being rolling would be fantastic in general.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, the idea of having like a minimal install, like doing a minimal install, having no applications, and then only installing snaps on top. And then you just automatically get updates for all of them. It's fantastic. So,
but who could live with having all of the apps they use installed as snaps, Alan?
Me. I've actually got my hand in the air. on my KDE laptop, everything I use is a snap. Everything. Mm-hmm. Firefox, Slack, Telegram, IRC Cloud, Spotify, the terminal.
So you're not actually using any KDE apps?
No, not a single one. Well, other than console, the terminal. Right. That's the only non-snap that I use. So, yeah, it works. It's great. I only need 5 apps, whatever platform. In fact, those same 5 apps I could use on a Mac or on Windows, like so long as I have Firefox, Slack, Spotify, you know. But that's a conversation for another day.
There's a lot of KDE snaps as well. I'll show you some great ones.
Oh, good man. That's the end of your feedback. Wow, that's all for episode 4. I feel like we've invited you on as some kind of like drug dealer and you're giving me my hit of KDE stuff. And I'm going to have to invite you on again in a few weeks to get another hit.
Got any plasma, mate? Got any plasma?
Yeah, the first one's free. Yeah. Thank you, Michael, so much for coming on.
You're welcome. I appreciate it.
And yes, we'll put all the links to everything you've mentioned. And obviously, I will ping you on Telegram shortly with all these things that you keep telling me and I need to find out about. But yeah, I think next week, I think Martin will be back and we'll have a usual news type show. As always, if you have any feedback or anything you want to let us know about, any events that are coming up or any community related news, then all the details for how to get in touch with us are on the website, ubuntupodcast.org. But obviously you could just use email like normalbarbarians@ubuntupodcast.org.
Or you can drop by our Telegram channel as well. There's a link on the website.
Yes, indeed. Bye-bye, everyone.